Hey, yo, what is a cipher?
It's so nice to have an actual conversation about songs. I appreciate it.
The knowledge of the cipher is to enlighten you.
Where you think the cipher come from? The gods.
Because you tried to jump the cipher and it goes this way.
Welcome to The Cipher, a weekly podcast where we bring you conversations with the most interesting figures in hip-hop and culture. I'm your host, Sean Sotero. This was our very first episode, a 2012 talk with one of my absolute favorite MCs, Jean Grey. It was a very special conversation for me, one that inspired me to begin this podcast in the first place. From her start in the 90s with the group Natural Resource, all the way to her recent projects like Cookies or Comas and the Gotham Down trilogy, Jean Grey has always been a standout in the world of hip-hop. Her sophisticated rhyme schemes and flows, hilarious wordplay, introspective and insightful lyrics, and more than a touch of good old-fashioned violence have made her albums like This Week and Genius essential listening for anyone who cares about the art of rap. At the time we spoke, Cookies or Comas, hosted by DJ Drama, was her latest album. I spoke to Jean at the Rap Genius office in Brooklyn. I began by asking her about her then new single, You and Me and Everyone We Know. If you enjoy The Cipher and want to see it continue, consider making a donation at patreon.com/thecipher show. We even have special rewards and experiences for our donors. Also, make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to The Cipher on iTunes. The more 5-star ratings we get, the better chance we have of continuing to get great guests. For more information about this episode, including a list of the songs you'll hear, visit us at theciphershow.com. While you're there, you can also listen to our over 100 past episodes. And now, here's rapper, writer, comedian, author, cook, and awesome guest at a karaoke party, Jean Grey.
I guess I just wanted to start because of your jacket, mostly, which You guys can't see, but has all the lyrics to one of her songs on the back of it, asking about You and Me. So
we just met, so I don't, you know... Maybe we should get that sometime.
Right. Maybe. But also about the song. It kind of has two sides to it, right? On one hand, it's like a serious, mature breakup song. And on the other hand, it's this rap song full of wordplay and puns and like really elaborate stuff on that side of things.
Ron Brown shit, Eric Sermon style, like I got kicked off a cloud, Method Man 95. Rap references because you get them all. You even get that I should have said it was 94. Hard place when you wanna still rock to it. Living in my glass house, steady throwing rocks through it all. I never stop feeling the love for you. I just stop being the one for you.
How do you ensure that one side of that doesn't overshadow the other? How do you keep those two things in balance?
I think that's, you know, kind of alludes to relationships in general as well, trying to keep a balance between two things. You and Me was a really interesting song for me to write. It was, you know, I really thought that everything was done for the album. And I was in Puerto Rico, got this beat from M Phases, and everyone else was recording out there, and we'd been out there for like 3 days, and I hadn't done anything. I mean, I'd done a lot of swimming and suntanning, so that was good.
Right.
But people were getting work done, and I was like, oh, shit, I really gotta try. So I put this beat on about, like, maybe 10 o'clock in the morning. And I write normally really quickly. And I was like, oh, this should be a breeze. It's a real simple, mellow beat. I'll be able to do this. And I sat there, I wrote something, and I was like, this is shitty, shitty fucking garbage, and I suck. And I walked away. I It's like, okay, I'm going to make some breakfast and go cook. And I cooked for everybody and I came back and I sat down and I tried to write it again. It's like 4 hours later. And I wrote something else that was shitty, more shitty shit. And I gave up again and walked away and was like, no, I really, really want to write to this beat. This beat is my beat. I think a lot of times when you hear tracks and you know, something in those chords definitely spoke to me. And I didn't want to let it go. I didn't want someone else to have it. It was one of those beats that if someone had it later, you'd be like, why didn't I do this? And I sat there for the next 6 hours, and it's the longest song ever, and the shortest song I've ever written. And I wanted to approach it correctly. I wanted to be witty about it. It's one long verse. And, you know, just writing it in that way was also different for me. And not breaking it up. And even doing the hook. I've never done anything that simple. But it didn't feel like it had to be any more difficult.
Repeat after me.
You and me and everyone we know. That's you and me and everyone we know. That's you and me and everyone we know. That's you and me and everyone we know. You and me and everyone we know. That's you and me and everyone we know. You and me and everyone we know. That's you and me and everyone we know.
So it was a lot. It was the one song I've ever really, really struggled with. So, yeah, I have no idea how I made it balance out. It took hours, and I think it came. It's my favorite song of mine. It's the first song that I've had on repeat ever of mine.
There's one other thing about it. Like I said, you know, it's a breakup song, right? But a mature one, a serious one, and that and the Blame Game freestyle, right, mm-hmm. are both kind of on that same general topic.
Now one of the things that I'm uttering when under drinks is how I really feel. The feelings built a wall up. Skyscraper with every story it gets taller. I'm facing this February with less morals. Less normal, more Nelly Olsen, less Laura.
You don't really hear rap songs about that. It's a fantastic means to express that kind of stuff, but you don't hear it. And it's in some ways kind of almost uncharted territory, if I can be a little dramatic yeah. about it. And did you feel when you were writing that stuff like, oh, I'm doing something new here?
Not for me. I've definitely, you know, touched on subjects of breakups and relationships, you know, especially as early as going back to Love Song, which was really, really personal.
Go through a couple of these relationships, still stay strong. She's too young and dumb to call it quits. Learns that she's carrying twice, scared and afraid the first time. The second she don't even cry, makes her wipe away his tears and it hurts. They always leave her turn crazy so she doesn't flirt. Spends time mourning the babies. Goes through a couple of these relationships and still stay strong. Too young and dumb to call it quits. It's still a love song.
And even in other songs and PS and addressing relationships and breakups and how you deal with it.
I just wanted to say I'm sorry. Sorry for cheating. Sorry I wasn't honest. It wasn't a good reason. You probably don't care, but I still mean it. Still put it in the air and hope that you feel that I'm being sincere. You didn't deserve a broken heart, and I wish you the world. Love, Jean. Scream later to girl.
And coming out of writing Suffocate or Death, which is all dealing with that topic, it was right on the same... No, and I wanted to put stuff in Cookies or Comas that, you know, doing Blame Game was sort of elated. Like, let me just throw this in there so you guys can kind of see where it's going.
Okay. On that kind of same topic, a lot of your songs are really personal, right? And, like, Take Me deals with, you know, serious, probably near-suicidal mm-hmm. depression.
Hit depression hard and started to pick at the scab from the scar. I'm a mess of dressing pain in a bar. I confess because all the rest just more shit. Chest in a cast. Feeling urges just to test out a casket. Bless me, I'm blasphemous. Jesus has the...
And Live For You really struck me, right? Song about your mother, obviously in a tribute to her. But in the middle of it, there's this incredible idea where you talk about your shortcomings and then you wonder if she wouldn't have been happier being someone else's mother.
I wonder if you switch places, change the dial on me. Would you rather be somebody else's mommy? Divorce probably, disown me, no apology needed. I understand the reason, it's the quality of living. But what you want for children, I'm not giving it. But you're the kind of love that never gives up. I would give my life.
And I thought that was just such a scary thought and such a powerful thought to verbalize, to say out loud, and then on top of it, to put it in a song, in a public format like that. So I guess, you know, if you could talk a little bit about being so open and so personal in songs, especially in a genre like rap, where people spend their whole careers trying to essentially appear invulnerable.
Yeah. I think, you know, it definitely changed in the past few years. I think the state of being vulnerable at all, I think with Kanye's earlier stuff, really started approaching that and being honest. And I think there was also a time where I was always also like, I feel like maybe it was a little too forced. Like, maybe you don't always have to do that.
Right.
I was just listening to, before I left the house, to Jay-Z's Big Pimpin' verse.
You know I thug 'em, fuck 'em, love 'em, leave 'em, cause I don't fucking need 'em. Take 'em out the hood, keep 'em looking good, but I don't fucking feed 'em. First time they fuss, I'm breathing. Talk about what's the reason. I'm a pimpin' every sense of the word, bitch. Better trust and believe 'em.
And that to me is, it's a serious, like, commitment follow verse.
Right.
And it was a really honest, vulnerable, nope, what? I'm not going to do that. So I think there's definitely songs and there's places where it's kind of hidden, where it has definitely been out there,
right,
where people don't necessarily notice because of the way it's presented. And my stuff has always been super, super honest and open, and maybe to a fault,
right,
at certain points. I think when I was a little younger and not really knowing how to deal with the responsibility of presenting that, you know, that I would be really, really harsh. And I think now I understand how to present it and go into those areas without being, you know, a douche.
Yeah.
You know, for lack of a better word. You know, you can put someone else's business out there, but it doesn't necessarily have to be damaging,
right,
to them or to you. Because if you're saying it, it's, you know, like, it should be a form of therapy. There should be, you know, a resolution to it at,
yeah,
some point. It's not just saying it to fucking say it, right, or to be like, oh, this is all me, and then you don't do anything with it and you don't learn.
Right. You brought up Jay a second ago,
mm-hmm,
and I wanted to ask you about him and your relationship with him. Obviously you're a fan, but it in some ways goes beyond that. You freestyle over a bunch of his work.
Welcome to the Rap Olympics.
Yeah.
Jean Grey, the gold medalist. Dirty like old gymnastic coaches prone to pedophilia. Rep stamina longer than European professional pedalist. I bench press verbs, phrases, and predicates. Make you run the track backwards like dyslexic 100-yard dashes. A treadmill's at work in reverse. I'm the total package. Flows to six pack.
You've done sort of answer songs to his.
Nice.
Yeah. Bet you ain't know from the way that I stepped in. The light shone from the second floor down the door that I'm writing on. You're more into the fact that I'm so cute. Boots to the calf match and the half top jeans in the bag. Only thing.
Why is he a touchstone for you, as opposed to, you know, Biggie or Rakim or any other person on that kind of legendary level? What about his work in particular, you know, makes you want to, you know, as you said, get high and analyze?
So you working for a girl and way crazy, smarter than average lady, ambitious but still get high, analyze Jay-Z. Smiley face.
I think coming out of Natural Resource, when I was realizing that I wanted to do something different, and I finally realized, I was like, okay, if I'm going to be doing this thing, then I got to figure out what my voice is. And his particular tone and being very conversational about it was something that struck me, that I hadn't really heard anyone who just felt like they were just talking and playing with phrases and words in the middle of it, but it still just felt like a conversation. Was something that really inspired me. And, you know, my first song when we came out of that group was, first song that I wrote solo for myself was Keep Living.
I don't even love life no more. My niggas, I just live it. And I don't love. All the hurting is infinite.
Uh-huh.
I cry myself to sleep sometimes. Wept a gallon of tears from malice, divorce, mates to lost peers. Drowned in a haze of smoke and glasses that never ran empty. Bottles of SoCo, cheap vodka in 2020.
When you find something that inspires you, I think there was a lot of times where I took a little bit too much and then found a way to be able to be like, okay, this is my voice, this is the way I'll be able to talk to people. But it was a really interesting time for me, because I was, you know, still super heavy into lyrical shit, and I do love Biggie, and I've done a couple of Biggie covers.
Right, right.
You know, for totally different reasons.
Sicker than your average, teeny gang letters off instinct. Niggas don't think, sip drinks with players from my Detroit neighbors. Still love Tim's on my hooligans in Brooklyn. If the show's right, you know.
But yeah, that's really what struck me.
Okay. Another touchstone, if I'm reading it right,
this is
like,
really good.
Oh, good. Is like first album Eminem, mm-hmm. right? Slim Shady LP era Eminem. And what's your relationship to that work? I feel like there are similarities in style and approach, right? You freestyled over, you know, beats from that era.
Yeah, loser. Well, if you're choosing to go against Gene, you'd better assemble a squad that's better than the A-team. With the Green Hulk and shit that pops shirts. And a nigga with a shovel I can borrow when I drop the dirt. No, Lord, she's going berserk again.
And even, you know, shouted out lyrics, right? You had the whole, like, one sleeve up, like, Slim Shady's gear.
Mm-hmm. It's been a crazy year. Broke back the door, knocked his baby hair. One sleeve up like Slim Shady's gear.
What's your relationship to that, particularly that era of his career? Of him, like, first being on the national stage with him?
I was a huge, huge fan. And I think, you know, it was coming out of that group, finding a way to discuss my own issues and shortcomings and with, you know, saying I want to talk to people, but I don't want to lose the sensibility of myself and all of that and jokiness, because I think that can kind of go out the window. It was a great, refreshing time to hear someone be honest and vulnerable in a completely different way. And I think, you know, everything that was kind of going on at the time was a great inspiration to be, you don't have to not be yourself. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of facets to it, and you can fucking be multifaceted and go back in, and even if it's taboo to talk about it and shock factor, that you can, it's okay. You can go ahead and do that. And I felt like that was kind of unheard for women to say things that wasn't shock value unless it was sexual.
Sure.
And, you know, and also I'm a huge fan of words and rhythm placement.
Yeah.
And I hadn't heard anyone do that well in a while.
Sure. And he's obsessive, obviously, about that stuff. Yeah. Yeah. So, obviously, one thing that connects, you know, that era Eminem with you is violence, but not just violence, right? A very particular kind of like cartoony ultra violence. Like, this is a real part of your style, this kind of cinematic ultra violence thing.
Wait till they're in range, then pull a little chain. Clothesline them just in time to see the boys exploding brains. I'm sick, I need help. I'm climbing side of the track to tell them I know what I'm doing. Those aren't snares, those are slaps. One slap, two slaps, three slaps, four. Then I'll spaz out and stab, forget what the fuck I was counting for. Don't fuck with me, please, I'm asking nicely, back off. Put thumbtacks in my hands and grab your nuts, make a cough. You don't understand.
Why use that? Does it have something to do with, like, comic books or movies or...
I am insane.
that's probably why. Yeah, I guess I'm a fan of you know, ultraviolet movies and things like that, and definite gore and the blood and yes, comic books.
Right.
And for me, because we weren't doing, you know, videos, and if we did, we were doing videos with like $3.
Sure.
I'm like, I had to develop my style as being super, super visual.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I can't make it so that you can see it, I have to tell it so that you can see it.
Right.
And so painting a picture kind of in that way made it seem more real to me.
Thank you for noticing that. Nobody ever. It's like, it is so nice to have an actual conversation about songs. I appreciate this.
Thank you. Speaking of songs,
mm-hmm.
For me, it's like one of your absolute sort of crowning achievements, if I can be, you know, sort of use that kind of language, Here's Taco Day.
Pulled up in the school parking lot, just me, Destiny, and a shotgun riding. Perfect timing, assembly in the cafeteria for joy of creative writing. I walked up to the front doors, blew them open, started aiming and blasting. Stood frozen in the main hall after the smoke rising, the sounds of screaming and gasping, they were everywhere. I ran into the west wing stairs, laughing and through the gym, stopped to reload, pulled out of grandpa's favorite flask and took a hit of gin, then raised the gun up.
How do you create a character who does such awful things, but remains vulnerable and remains sympathetic? And then how do you telescope all of that into, you know, 6 or 7 minutes, however long?
I kind of think we're all people who do really fucked up things.
Yeah.
You know, try to be as good as we possibly can, or even if it's just going on in our heads at the time.
Yeah.
With that, it's really easy for me to create characters and step outside and go into, you know, personification and to step in someone else's shoes. And, you know, I'm a huge fan of movies and books, and I'm a huge fan of character development. And I'm a huge fan of character development when it's done correctly, whether it be in sitcoms, movies. Like, I'm the person who'll complain that, like, I walked out of, what did we discuss? Safe House.
He was one of the most brilliant CIA operatives we ever had. Until he went rogue. He's responsible for the deaths of multiple agents.
And we're about half an hour in. Now, it's filmed in Cape Town, so I'm like, wow, I get to see Cape Town. And Ryan Reynolds is in it with his shirt off a lot, and I was like, this is great. And through that, I was like, I can't fucking stand this. I was like, did they just start in the middle of the movie? I don't understand. There's zero character development. I don't care what happens to Denzel. I don't care what happens to Ryan Reynolds. Nobody developed a character. They're not telling the story right. At this mark, this should happen. At this mark, this should happen. I was just kind of done with it. I feel the same way about writing it in song, the same as you would anything else. And Taco Day... we'd had the idea, and we had the idea for months, and Len gave me the beat months before, so I've been sitting with it for a while. And like I normally do, on the day of the session, I was like, yeah, what? Totally wrote it. And I was like, holy shit, I gotta write this fucking song. Nobody said make it 9 minutes, but I was like, there's no other way I could possibly tell the story.
Sure.
So Taco Day was written in a couple of hours, and I actually wasn't done by the time I got to the studio. So when we would have breaks, or I would finish a verse, I'd be like, hold on. And I'd be on the floor in the booth writing the rest of it. So there's so many things that I would go back and do differently had I allowed myself the time.
Right.
But I'm like, maybe it made it, the rush of it added to the character a little bit, I think, you know.
Right, because she's obviously operating in this very, like, I decide to do something and I
right.
do it.
And, you know, there was a definite backstory behind it, and I wanted it to have motivation, and I didn't want it to just be, hey, some kid goes into school and shoots up a school, because, you know what, maybe now that could happen without a backstory, but I don't feel like, you know, it's just something that occurs just out of fucking nowhere.
Right.
So I wanted to, you know, try to dissect things instead of just saying, that's fucking horrible. And, you know, people have no reason behind it.
Yeah. Just in passing there, you mentioned Cape Town.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously you were born in South Africa. On one of your tunes, you talked about being... Manhattan raised African born.
I give a fuck about anatomy, I'll splatter your spawn. Manhattan raised African born, word beast. Slurred speech never when I rep the East, herb. Reverse rhyme, jeans, squeaky clean now. Your purse better be in the lock.
Right? And then there's a song, Block Party. And you said something in there that really caught my attention, which was you compared the territorialism of identifying with the block, right? The block you live on, and I'm going to live and die for my block. With the dynamic that allowed for the colonization of Africa.
Get off your block and travel. Stop acting like your flesh is metal and your hood's a magnet. We need to globalize, further spread on this earth to appreciate the full value of individual worth. To realize how ridiculous the thought of ownership is of protecting your turf. It's bullshit, man. That's how we got colonized.
missionaries. We get a lot of people to come in and effectively colonize and rule almost the entire continent. Did being, you know, from South Africa but growing up here in Manhattan, do you think that allowed you to see those kind of similarities? I mean, that's a pretty unusual comparison to turn out.
I think my parents' careers and their lifestyle and their choice to, you know, self-exile, I think I was very lucky in a lot of ways to be able to see so much.
Jean is the daughter of two renowned South African musicians. Her father is the jazz pianist and composer Abdullah Ibrahim, also known as Dollar Brand. Her mother is the late jazz singer and composer Satima B. Benjamin, who passed away in the summer of 2013. The family moved from South Africa to New York City shortly after Gray was born, in a self-imposed exile from their home country.
In my memory banks, Atlanta, up to Canada, then back home to South Africa. Thanks for widening the buzz diameter.
And it wasn't just, you know, being, you know, an immigrant. It was them being able to keep traveling as they were traveling. So I got to see, you know, a lot of the world, a lot of Europe and Australia and places when I was really young. And you know, knowing that most of us can't, are not afforded that luxury. And the thing about Block Party was, okay, I can understand that, and I can understand maybe you can't, you know, necessarily go to Germany tomorrow, but, you know, we are in New York City, and there are trains, and there are boroughs, and you can go see something, and there's so many amazing things in this city to see that could broaden your perspective. And Block Party, I think now, What made me write that song was I saw a Jamie Foxx stand up, and he had just come back from South Africa, from Cape Town specifically.
Yeah.
And he, this is the 90s, yeah, 90s, 2000, something like that. But his stand up was, you know, he was like, I got off the plane. He was like, and it was just the smell, and it was horrible.
There's some things you got to get used to when you get to Africa, like the smells. Bring you an extra set of nostrils or something to click on, because you're going to burn those furs too right the fuck off as soon as you get off the plane. Shit, what the fuck is this I done landed in? It's like, shit. And you and they just used to it. It's musty as hell. These little musty ones. And you like this. I ain't got no fan or nothing. This shit is tearing my mustache up. I can't even fucking...
It went into such of a... depiction of Africa. I was like, why would you do that? Because I just came from Cape Town. When I got off the plane, I was like, oh my God, it smells amazing. So it was more of the anger of people who are afforded the luxury of travel, don't come back and teach people around them. And especially those who have the ability to have an audience, don't take that responsibility. And I thought, you know, definitely a lot of rappers, like, you guys are traveling all over the world. How are you either, A, not learning anything from those travels, and B, coming back and just not telling people?
Right, and still acting like Zone 6 Atlanta,
yeah,
or whatever
is
the only thing on
it's that was insane to me, and still is.
Right. On a slightly lighter note... On the last EP, you introduced the hipster spider.
I spin spit different, I'm a hipster arachnid. Specifically classics, but consider me average. If
and I was just wondering what he's been up to, how he's doing.
The hipster arachnid?
Yeah.
Hipster arachnid, this is what happens to me. This is why I'm insane. That I immediately, when I wrote that line, I stopped. I have a creating character problem. So immediately, hipster arachnid became this entire character. I was like, we gotta do like a short on him or something. So in my mind, he's a giant spider. But he's got, you know, glasses on and a stupid fucking hat. And he wears ironic t-shirts. He tries to, but, you know, legs. Got a lot of legs. So he goes around Williamsburg, and he spins like he's like intricate fucking web, and he does like he rips off like Picasso and stuff, and then he walks away, and it comes back the next day, and people are looking at it, and people would be like, "That's amazing," and he's like, "Whatever, kind of over it." I mean, he was cool last night, and he's kind of a dick. But that's what happens when I stumble on lines like that. It never just stops at that line because I'm a sci-fi.
Any chance at all of telling us who the masked names on Billy Killer are?
I swear God, I wish he'd snap, run up and go, stab in the back, then flip the table over, take his wallet, kick his throat in, and leave the knife attached to a note smoking. Man, go fuck, and Colin ran around for months and niggas ain't calling. I hate him going to these meetings trying to explain.
Yeah.
Alright.
Who did we bleep out? I think it was Billy Killer was about my ex.
Right.
Seemed
like mostly industry names and stuff that you were.
It was only one name. It was only one name because it was a, you know, it was too close to the deal at the time. It was a Chuck from Baby Grant.
Oh, okay.
Hi, Chuck. What's up?
Yeah, we won't get into that. Obviously, you've had your back and forth with them. So, you've worked recently, or toured recently, with one of my other favorite rappers, Invincible. And I was wondering, any more plans for tours, or maybe recording collaborations, or
definitely
like that?
What's really weird is that Invincible and I have never done a song. I don't know, it's a little weird. We just kind of haven't yet. But it's definitely something that's going to happen, and that's family. So, you know, I've known Invincible since... I don't remember how old I was. I think she was like 17, 18. So that's, we'll definitely be working together.
Fun. I look forward to it. Can you talk for a second about your fascination with Fight Club? I know you reference it in tons of your songs. Tyler Durden, nervous, the boys are back. Oh, yes, the boys in black, the boys are Uggs, as rap star. Frenchy, a flow. No, folks, your army brats. Made in a place, so I'm really not afraid of them. I'm Project Mayhem. I'm complex, based on the... And, you know, there are plenty of, you know, movies with lots of where things explode and, you know, the whole, like, you know, unknown doppelganger story has been done a couple times, right? Mm-hmm. Why that movie in particular?
I'm a huge fan of the author. I'd read the book, but I first saw Fight Club when I used to smoke a lot of weed. So I was also selling weed at the time. I just wasn't very good at it because I didn't really like to go out and sell weed. People would come over and then I would smoke it with them, and then when they left, I'd be like, "Well, I'm not high anymore now. I gotta smoke the rest of the week." So, my first time seeing Fight Club, I didn't see it in the theater at that time. I was really, really high. It was one of those things when you're really, really high, and you're like, "This is the greatest thing I've ever." What? So then I watched it again when I was not really, really high, and I was like, "No, this is still really fucking good." And as much as I love the book, I really liked the way that they approached it in the movie. And I thought it was insanely smart, and I thought it was brilliant acting. And I think there's always a part, even in, you know, this life, or even in a creative life, where you're like, I don't want to be here anymore. Maybe, what if I was doing something completely different? What if I was everything that I really, really wanted to be and acted how I really wanted to act? And how would the world react to that? And that was, you know, always a thought for me. For me, luckily, I go into rap and it gets to be my Tyler Durden. You know, yeah. I get to be who I want to be, say what I want to say, act how I want to act, and it doesn't necessarily have to. You know, I don't have to blow the world up, which I would if I could. But it's, I relate very, very much.
Yeah.
And then just personally, I think in personal experiences, the idea of, you know, it's only until you let go of everything that you're ready to do anything.
What? Hitting bottom isn't a weekend retreat. It's not a goddamn seminar. Stop trying to control everything and just let go. Let go!
All right, fine.
Fine. Has been crazy and really, really true for me in the past few years.
Okay, that ties into something else I wanted to ask, which was about the Cake or Death record.
Uh-huh.
So you're, segue. Yeah, your tag, I mean, just because you'd mentioned previously that was the interview, or excuse me, that was the album you would have made if you'd known you were allowed to make it.
Yeah.
Right?
You know what, and also if I'd known that I could make it.
Okay. What is the tagline for it, right? Is what kind of superhero will you be? What's behind... Jean Grey breaking the Rap Genius
that
office.
Kind of superhero. I would just break shit.
What's the idea behind that? What do you mean by that?
Our Cake or Death started out as Prom Night, which was the record I started recording about 5 years ago.
Right.
And you know, a couple of songs that I started with, like Super Genie.
Some of y'all saying the Jean, she ain't rocking this. Dropping shit, relaying, she ain't paid a pocket since 94. I've been dropping this jaw, dripping same with the name shit. I rock them all. I'm Oxycontin.
And stick up dance.
Dance, motherfucker. Like someone was clapping down at your feet and do the stick up dance. It goes clap, motherfucker. Come on, get up your hands. I get the stick up, I'm the stick up man. It goes
I loved it. And it felt right at the moment, and I had no idea where the rest of that fucking album was going. I was like, these songs are great. At this point, it's just going to sound like a compilation of songs. I have no idea how to do this. And, you know, really, really struggled, recorded a lot of songs and worked with a lot of people I wanted to work with, and it just wasn't right. And then I left it alone for a while. I kind of walked away. And went through a bunch of life, which I think was absolutely necessary. As sometimes you need to fucking step away. I didn't have anything to write about anymore, you know. And went through a bunch of relationships. And there was a definite, you know, choices for my sanity, for my health, for just my own life in general, for people around me, and really important decisions that I found in that time that I had to make. And, you know, at a certain point, it was either, are you could be dead. Is that what you want to happen in the situation, or are you going to get up out of it and say, I'm going to change everything tomorrow. It doesn't matter what I lose, what I could possibly lose. I need to finish this. I need to finish my life. I'm not done yet. You know, there was a point in it where I was like, I don't want to rap anymore. I don't want to do this anymore. I'll just go find something else to do.
Mm-hmm. Did that coincide with your retirement?
In 2008, Jean posted a message to her MySpace page that most people viewed as a retirement message. It read in part, "It's been a wonderful and awful journey all at the same time, mostly leaning towards the wonderful part, lol. Thank you for letting me share what I could with you and sharing yourselves back, as you have really been the reason that I kept on. Thank you, listeners, whom I consider my friends and family. Enjoy. See y'all around. It's been amazing."
What can you offer me? Apologies, security, amazing publicity, occult status, obscurity. Because I do nothing for the purity, the love. Get the fuck on with that. This ain't nothing but maturity.
Yeah. And it wasn't my anger at the industry. It wasn't any of that. I was like, really? Because I would have been angry at the industry a
right,
long
yeah.
fucking time. Why would I pick right. like now? What?
Right.
I got pissed off at y'all in the fucking 90s. Why would I do that? It was, I've done this for this many years. Why can't I move on and do something else? Just because fans want another record, that's great, but you're not living my life. Why would I continue to do this?
Yeah.
And with that, the understanding of, I can do this, I can finish it, and I can also do other things at the same time. Completely be able to multitask it, completely be able to live out my life as a grown-up.
Yeah.
You know, that's what grown-ups have to do. Be a person and an artist,
yeah.
and you know, as multifaceted as I want to be, to live out all of those things. If I want to write, write. If I want to cook, cook. Whatever it is. And the decision to do that was really an open door to writing the album the way I wanted to. And being completely honest about it. And, you know, as much dark shit as I write, you know, whether it's Taco Day or Super Violence, Take a Death took on a tone where I had discussed all the things that were absolutely personal and horrible and heartbreaking and gut-wrenching, but then had to find a resolution to it. You know, like I said, it's great to just talk about it, but and then what? What are you going to do after that? And I didn't want it to be an album where it just addressed that and then kind of left the listener nowhere. Like, I'm trying to take you to a point where I just found, you know, good salvation in the form of myself. And it was it's a you gotta save yourself record, and nobody else is gonna do it. And being the superhero who goes through all that shit and you know, at the end you gotta get the fuck up and put your oxygen mask on and try to save some other people. Because I think it can go either way. You can go through all that shit and still turn into a terrible fucking person. And for me, it wasn't necessarily that. So all of that being said, you know, it starts off horribly uncomfortable and scary and ends up on a really good note, I hope. I try to be as inspirational as I can. It's not, you know, religious or anything else. And so we've added the visuals, and the idea is that it jumps around linear time. And kind of, you know, your past is your present, is your future, is everything else. So we kind of start in Assassins from Pharaoh's Song.
100 assassins to infiltrate the headquarters where the files of enslaved people were kept. These 197 were captured, tortured, and executed. Only three remained. The third of which was said to own an arsenal that would rival an entire city's police force. The second was rumored to be able to move throughout space and time. And the first?
One. Fasten your seatbelts for the last of the three assassins on Earth. The first flash in her purse with a heat stealth that drew me Jean McCoy.
And jump a little bit ahead to the future. And I've kind of become this assassin who... from the song, and kind of loses it and starts to have, you know, just no remorse for anything. Mm-hmm. Get the opportunity to come back and say, this is not, I didn't do it right. I wanted to be a superhero, but this is just fucking all wrong.
Right.
So I get the opportunity to go back and do things again. So it's the idea of, if you had that time machine, if you had the way to go back, what would you do different? Okay. And if you could do anything different, is the outcome really going to change just who you are or what you can do with the world around you? Or are you just destined to be who you're supposed to be? So that's the whole idea behind it.
All right. Excellent. You mentioned...
God, that was a long fucking answer. Shit!
I'm exhausted. So about the sort of the climate in which you're releasing this record, mm-hmm. right? Something jumped out at me when I was thinking about it. I know you're a Louis C.K. fan. So the show that he did maybe 5-6 years ago, Lucky Louie, great show, but didn't go over well, right? Barely lasted the season. Now he has Louie that also is genre hopping and strange and personal and has done extremely well.
Yes.
Do you think maybe that means that there's more room in the culture, maybe for work that has those kinds of qualities? Like maybe yours?
And a good reference. Oh, I'm so excited. Can I just come here every day?
Fine with me.
I was a huge fan of Lucky Louie, but it was one of those shows that I watched it, and I watched the first episode. I was like, yep, this is getting canceled. No, this is not going to go over well.
Yeah.
Because people weren't, it's way ahead of its time.
Yeah.
And shockingly real.
We have to have our party. We take the bus all year long. We never eat out. We share deodorant.
This is the one thing that we do right all year long, and now we can't even have that? So what does that make us?
Well, we still got each other.
Fuck that shit. And it just approached, it was so intimate. And I think it really scared people. I think that the other show that was around that time was The Comeback, Lisa Kudrow.
Okay.
Another really, really realistic, but it was so uncomfortable that I would walk away and be like, I can't even watch this part. Oh my God.
Well, I've had some exciting new career offers. I recently turned down the lead in a TV movie about a woman who's raped by her entire town, including her father and brother, and it's called A Matter of Life. And it would have been a nice dramatic turn, but it dealt with issues of abortion. And I don't want to go anywhere near that. So, you know. Plus, it shot up in Nova Scotia. You know, get raped all day and then nowhere nice to have dinner. Okay.
No, I don't think people were ready for it at that time. I definitely, exactly what you said. You know, I think everything happens without sounding ridiculously cliche, when it's supposed to. And I know there's a lot of, oh, Jean, you know, she missed it. She totally missed her time, blah, blah, blah. I was like, no, I don't think so. I don't think I would have been able to do this kind of work, and I don't think anybody was open enough to hear it. No matter what age the fans are, even if it's, you know, fans who have grown up with me at that point weren't ready to deal with that kind of shit.
Yeah.
And there wasn't really a vehicle, as much as technology has grown, for me to be able to take it into my own hands so much. I think that also has changed a lot, you know, in terms of social media, me getting to present myself as a brand and a personality outside of everything else really, really helps people. Or it doesn't. And they kind of realize, I don't get it. I'm like, well, that's good. Then it's
right.
Clearly not
wasn't
for
you.
Yeah. Yeah. Great. We're all on board.
Thanks.
You may go now.
Nice.
Are we going to two or three more?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Because you have to go.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, let's see.
He's got literally 50 questions.
Okay. Yeah,
I was answering one because it was a really good question.
Yeah. No.
In Nonsense, right, in that tune, you beg off being called elitist, right? You say, hardly elitist, you know, I know the struggle.
Mm-hmm.
And I talked to Solkhan about this when I talked to him, about your relationship with maybe some of your more elitist, purist fans, like mm-hmm. Solkhan told me about when he used to work at Fat Beats, and there were people who were proud of not having bought a record since The Infamous.
Yeah.
You know, and so I was wondering about your relationship to, like, these kinds of sort of purist fans.
I think the problem is that, you know, I don't fucking care. Listen to whatever you listen to or don't listen to it. My issue is that, I think those, a lot of times, not for all of them, are the fans who judge their artists by thinking that you're going to have the same musical taste as them, and which is absolutely fucking insane. And you just can't expect anyone to do exactly what you want them to do or you've made up in your mind just because they make this kind of music that you are such a purist about. I've had some arguments or people question, you know, why do you do the song Lil B?
B's in love with the music, so lead the brother to use it, lead the public to new shit. See the puppets ain't do it, you keeping up with they viewing, you see the numbers they doing, we feeding us, the three of us, plus nine, more than Kanye Cup.
Well, I'm like, look, basically, because I pretty much have always done what the fuck I wanted to do, so it has nothing to do with anything, and number two, it's not your fucking business, and if you don't want to listen to it, that's cool. There is a lot of
you have lots of songs.
You may go listen to something else.
Yeah.
And if you choose to not listen to me anymore, then trust me, this music was probably not for you in the first place. Just judgmental anything, I don't really get down with.
Okay. All right. What about the book? You've been working on a book. What's up with that?
The book started out as a state of on my blog.
Right.
And I was inspired and to start writing down all these chapters. It then started going into the form of, I'm kind of tired of hearing every day being like, why don't you have your own show? How is this not a show? And I was like, it is. It's the Jean Grey show all the fucking time. You're on it right now. You're just making a cameo appearance and you don't even fucking know. So it has taken more of the focus of the show, which is Life with Jeannie. And because I'm such a fan of, you know, things like Louie or Kerr, I didn't want to do a reality show. And I wanted to tell these stories in an honest way that we kind of hadn't seen from someone who looks like me. And also in a very New York kind of way. I think it's, you know, something that's definitely missing. So really focusing on doing it as the show right now. So I actually have to get home to finish scripting the pilot.
Wow.
Which...
You heard it here first.
Yeah, I sat down yesterday and kind of went in to start restructuring it.
Yeah.
Because I worked on this the treatment for You and Me and realizing how hard it is to go in and write dialogue the way I like it.
Yeah.
And editing the way I like it. I'm trying to make it smart and funny and well done, and I'm writing it all my goddamn self. So that's fun.
Wow.
But yeah, the book is now the show, which will then be the book.
Excellent. And one last thing. You were maybe the very first rapper to be sort of publicly supportive of Rap Genius, right? We put up the song, put up Case Basket.
This is true!
Yeah.
What else do I get? Can I just start taking stuff? God, pick up that and the knives and forks and I mean
you know and you know we put up the song and you kind of responded almost immediately. And so, can you say a little something about Rap Genius that you know and what it is and maybe how it relates to your work?
I was wonderfully, wonderfully, wonderfully surprised. That because I get my lyrics posted up a lot of places, and 120 times out of 50 times, they are fucked up and wrong.
Yeah.
And so I went to the site because I usually go when people post it up, and not only were they correct, maybe like one or two things, but the explanation was there. And not only was the explanation there for different sections, but it was right. And it was like having a string of fucking terrible, horrible dates, and then you go on a date with someone and they understand all your fucking jokes, and you're like, oh my God, you get me. And that's what it felt like. I was like, you guys get me. Thank you. Sometimes my shit needs explaining because it's usually really dense, and there's a lot. And there was, you know, reactions that I got even from guy who was like, you said that? I didn't even know that you said that. So you guys helped me out immensely, and I love the job that you're doing, and I think it's important.
Alright, well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Jean Grey, a Rap Genius?
I am a Rap Genius, thank you.
This has been an updated version of a previously released episode of The Cypher. Visit thecyphershow.com for information about this episode or any one of our others. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at The Cypher Show. Hit us up. Let us know what you thought of this episode, ideas for future guests, anything you'd want to talk about. Also, one more time, find The Cypher on iTunes. Make sure to rate, review, and subscribe. The Cypher is created and written by Sean Sotero.
This is shitty, shitty fucking garbage.
The show is produced and engineered by Josh Cross at Crosstown Studios.
I was also selling weed at the time. I just wasn't very good at it because I didn't really like to go out and sell weed.
Our music is by 42 Ghosts.
It was a little too forced. Like, maybe you don't always have to do that.
We'll see you next time around on The Cypher.
I do. Thank you.